Next.
Good afternoon. It's 4:30 and 81 degrees in Moorhead. This is Mountain Edition. I'm Dan Conte.
And I'm Samantha Morrill.
We want to try to protect the timber resources as well as people's health. And obviously, some of these wildfires can get out of control sometimes.
Dry, windy weather has prompted Floyd County Judge Executive Ben Hale to declare a ban on outdoor burning.
A search is underway for two prisoners who escaped from a Paintsville prison.
And a Democratic state representative questions the timing of pay raises for highway workers announced this week by Governor Bevin.
In sports, a long drought for a World Series championship will end tonight. The only question is whether there will be joy in Cleveland or Chicago.
Bud Luke has the stocks.
Partly cloudy and cooler tonight, lows in the upper 50s. The complete forecast is coming up after this news.
Floyd County Judge Executive Ben Hale has ordered a ban on all outdoor burning. He says there are three or four active fires around the county now, which are being fueled by dry weather and winds. Hale does not want to see any more.
It will only get worse if we don't get these under control. So the best thing to do is just say there's no burning at all. There's no after six or anything. It's a complete burn ban, and hopefully everybody will adhere to it until we get some rain or they get these fires under control.
Hale says the ban is intended to limit property damage and any respiratory difficulties people might experience because of thick smoke.
A county clerk in eastern Kentucky who refused to issue marriage licenses to same-sex couples last year is asking a judge not to make her pay legal fees for the couples who sued her. Attorneys for the couples who sued Rowan County Clerk Kim Davis asked U.S. District Judge David Bunning to award them $233,058 in legal fees and costs. But the Lexington Herald Leader reports Davis's lawyers urged Bunning in a response filed Monday to deny their request. Roger K. Ganim of Liberty Council, the religious advocacy organization that has represented Davis, wrote that the case was resolved in the legislature and the couples aren't entitled to legal fees. Jeffrey C. Mando, an attorney for Rowan County, said in a separate response that county government shouldn't be forced to pay anything.
Authorities are searching for two prisoners who escaped from the Big Sandy Regional Detention Center. Kentucky State Police say 25-year-old Justin Arnett of Sawyersville and 31-year-old Melvin Garland of Royalton apparently got out of the lockup through ductwork early Tuesday. Arnett was serving time in the Paintsville prison for possession of a controlled substance and promoting contraband in Perry County. Garland was in jail for burglary, theft, and being a persistent felony offender. The charges were out of Morgan County. Troopers are asking anyone with information about the inmates to contact the KSP.
A 36-year-old Mason County Detention Center inmate is back in custody. Matthew Martin of Warsaw was captured late Tuesday after walking away from a work detail at the county's recycling center earlier in the day. According to jailer Lisa O'Hearn, she contacted a former girlfriend who told her that Martin had used the cell phone of an acquaintance to call her recently. O'Hearn then got in touch with the man.
The gentleman had shared with me that he had dropped Mr. Martin off between the area of 2370 and Kentucky 19 in Bracken County. At that time, my deputies and I, we then went to that area and conducted a surveillance and patrol area, to which at that point is when we located Mr. Martin on the AA highway.
Martin had been serving time for a conviction on drug trafficking and receiving stolen property charges. He'll likely now be charged with escape. O'Hearn isn't sure why Martin attempted to escape.
The Boyd County Jail is under investigation. MSPR's Victoria Agee has that story.
According to the Ashland Daily Independent, federal authorities have begun looking into whether or not Boyd County Detention Center is violating the constitutional rights of its prisoners. The primary focus is whether or not they are being sufficiently protected from the use of excessive force, whether they have been made susceptible to the invasion of their bodily privacy, and if the jail's workers are subjecting the inmates to restrictive housing without due process. According to a news release, the Civil Rights Division of the U.S. Justice Department is conducting the probe. The investigation is being handled under the Civil Rights of Institutionalized Persons Act. Reporting for Moorhead State Public Radio News, I'm Victoria Agee.
A federal prison official in Ashland is asking the Kentucky legislature to allow a small number of inmates within the U.S. correctional system to obtain Kentucky driver's licenses. Scott Butcher serves as Reentry Affairs Coordinator for the Mid-Atlantic region. He says it would help the prisoners develop additional work skills likely to keep them from becoming repeat offenders once they're released. Butcher points out that the license would only be granted to inmates who've not committed violent or sexual offenses and have not been a disciplinary problem. He says it would also allow additional participation in the prisoner work program.
The work program reduces inmate idleness while allowing inmates to improve or develop useful job skills, work habits, and experiences that will assist them in post-release employment. Further, the inmate work program ensures that activities necessary to maintain the day-to-day operation of the institution are completed.
Butcher says the inmates would not be allowed to keep the license. It would be issued to them only when they're on a work detail outside the prison. He testified Tuesday before the Kentucky Legislature's Interim Joint Committee on Transportation.
An Ohio man could receive the death penalty in connection with the killing of an Ashland resident. The Daily Independent reports that 24-year-old Jacob Lane of Franklin Furnace has not only been charged with murder in the October 16th slaying of 21-year-old Justin Reeder, but is also facing first-degree robbery and second-degree burglary charges. In cases where a homicide is committed during the attempt of another specified felony, such as robbery, Kentucky law makes those charged eligible for the death penalty if they're convicted. A second man, Zachary Tarleton of Ironton, has been charged with criminal conspiracy to commit robbery in the same case.
Two men are held in a Portsmouth jail following their arrests on charges of manufacturing methamphetamine in a rural area near Rosemont in Scioto County. WOWK is reporting that 46-year-old William Large of South Shore and 50-year-old Estelle Haar of New Boston were taken into custody by Scioto County deputies and officers from the Southern Ohio Drug Task Force. The alleged meth operation is said to have been discovered when the Ohio Department of Natural Resources was asked to investigate a poaching complaint.
Kentucky Secretary of State Allison Lundergan Grimes thinks well over half of the state's 3.3 million registered voters will participate in Tuesday's election. She says that would be similar to the turnout in the last two presidential elections in 2008 and 2012.
Right now, based on the absentee vote totals that we are seeing, I believe and we're forecasting that turnout will be approximately 60% of our eligible registered voters turning out. But my hope is always that everybody proves me wrong and we have even more than that.
Neither of the presidential candidates has spent much time in Kentucky this year. The Commonwealth has just 8 electoral votes.
Republican Governor Matt Bevin is defending Donald Trump for comments the GOP presidential candidate made about sexual assault. Bevin appeared today on WHAS radio. He believes many of Trump's critics are less than virtuous.
The very same hypocrites that are supposedly outraged and offended by this are the very same people that I guarantee you were first in line to go watch 50 Shades of Grey to see if it was as trashy as the book they'd read.
Bevin claims many women privately support Donald Trump, but they're not going to put signs in their yards.
An Eastern Kentucky lawmaker embroiled in a tough re-election bid is questioning the timing of pay raises for some 3,700 state highway workers announced this week by Republican Governor Matt Bevin. Democratic State Representative John Short of Mallee is a member of the House Transportation Committee. Short says he and many other members of the legislature have been working on plans to provide additional compensation for highway employees for some time. In fact, he says, the General Assembly had actually passed legislation to deal with the issue.
You know, last year, on the 10th day of the veto session, the governor vetoed two very important provisions that would have addressed a lot of this. Why are we waiting now to a week before election to announce this?
Short says he was told nothing about the pay increase ahead of time. He's opposed in next week's election for the 92nd District House seat by Republican John Blanton, a retired Kentucky State Police trooper.
The chairman of the House Transportation Committee says he's pleased that almost 4,000 Kentucky highway workers are getting pay increases that average about $3.20 an hour. However, Johnson County Democrat Hubert Collins points out that around 800 employees are not receiving additional compensation.
I think that this 800 that we have not included needs some consideration to get a pay raise to keep these people in order that they won't be moving on somewhere else, because we have a problem with our good employees that's not making the money that they should make moving to another job.
Collins says the transportation cabinet should be able to provide pay increases for all 4,500 of its workers.
Moorhead state officials have put together a blue ribbon panel to study the university's regional outreach and empowerment efforts. School President Wayne Andrews says the goal of the initiative is to examine the things that MSU is currently doing to help those living in its 22-county service region and how those efforts can be improved.
This blue ribbon study will provide opportunities for us to consider strategies and potential alignments or realignments, talk about how we might use our resources in the same manner or a different manner to support our people, to help build a vibrant Eastern Kentucky, which we've always had a stake in.
The study will focus on four aspects: educational development, economic and workforce development, community development, and school and alumni relations. MSU Assistant Vice President for Adult Education and College Access, Dr. Dan Connell, is heading the Blue Ribbon Panel. It's expected to present its recommendations to President Andrews in April, with an action plan to start in July.
According to one official, a program that Moorhead State already offers can play a key role in helping the university recruit more students. Enrollment at MSU has declined in each of the last 3 years. It stands at 10,439 this fall, a drop of 4% from a year ago. Assistant Vice President for Enrollment Services Tim Rhodes says it's crucial MSU continue to work to build brand loyalty with the over 2,600 high school students who are on campus as part of the university's early college program.
It would give them ID cards so they have access to the ball games, to the rec center, to the library. We give them other materials. We make their admission very smooth without any hang-ups, any delays. We really are working hard to make them not only feel like they're a part of the university now, but make it just natural that they're going to come on to Moorhead State.
Under MSU's early college program, area high school students take dual credit classes, which can save them money on their college tuitions by helping them earn their post-secondary education degrees more quickly.
Carter County's school superintendent Ronnie Dotson vows things at West Carter High School will move forward in a positive direction, despite the untimely death of Principal John Baumgartner. The 53-year-old Baumgartner died Sunday after suffering a heart attack. According to Dotson, vice principals Kristen Evans and Sean Stewart, along with West Carter's experienced staff and faculty, are ready to continue the progress made at the school under Baumgartner's leadership.
When you do a job like Mr. Baumgartner did, then really you work on building capacity throughout your entire career. And so, you know, these people are fine folks, and they are excellent at the job that they do, and I'm sure that they will continue on as he would want them to in making sure that kids receive a great education.
Dotson says he'll meet with West Carter's site-based council in the coming days to discuss how to fill the school's vacant principal's post.
The Ohio EPA has issued a permit to Bioenergy to build a landfill gas power station at Rumkey's Brown County disposal site in Georgetown. Spokeswoman Heather Lauer says it allows the company to construct a facility that will produce electric power using gas generated at the dump. She says the EPA reviewed Bioenergy's application to ensure that emissions would comply with federal and state air pollution control standards. The action comes following a public hearing on the matter in September. Lauer says any appeal of the permit must be filed within 30 days.
And finally this afternoon, the Ashland Reservoir is getting a major cleaning, MSPR's Kenzie Thompson reports.
The Daily Independent reports that 6 years of sludge will be removed from the reservoir. Last week, 6 million gallons of water were drained from the reservoir. Evergreen AES Environmental Services will be paid $11,000 by the city to remove the sludge. The project should take just over a week. The water from the reservoir will be sent back into the Ohio River, but a catch basin has been created to dispose of the sludge. Some of it will be used to stabilize the riverbank, and over the next year, City Engineer Ryan Eastwood says they'll find a place for the remaining sludge since the EPA says it can't go back into the river. Funding for the project came from the Work Projects Administration. Reporting from Moorhead State Public Radio News, I'm Kenzie Thompson.
And now turning to take a look at the weather forecast for the MSPR listening area. Tonight, partly cloudy this evening, then becoming mostly cloudy later on. Those will be near 55 degrees. Thursday, warm and mostly cloudy with a chance of showers in the morning, then showers likely in the afternoon. Highs will be in the lower 70s and the chance of rain is at 70%. For Thursday night, partly cloudy with a 40% chance of showers in the evening. Lows will be in the mid-40s. It is currently 83 degrees in Ashland, 81 in Flemingsburg, 82 degrees in Inez. It's 80 degrees in both Lexington and Winchester. Right here on the campus of Moorhead State University, it is 81 degrees.
4:46, you are tuned to Mountain Edition on Moorhead State Public Radio, and it is mighty fine to have you with us on this Wednesday afternoon. On our feature segment, a new report suggests the rapid growth of charter schools could lead to the privatization of America's public school system, with 40% of the nation's charter schools part of corporate chains or franchises. The Ohio News Connection's Mary Sherman has that story.
What began as an experiment to create innovation through charter schools has become a movement to privatize public education, according to a new report. Stan Sillette, the city's co-author, spent more than four decades in public education and helped launch the nation's Head Start and Upward Bound programs. He says in the past two decades, a small group of billionaires, including News Corporation's Rupert Murdoch, who once called public schools an untapped $500 billion sector, have worked to assert private control over public education to make money.
And that's what's at play now. You've got a lot of money on one side going in to create a privatized school system that becomes part of the new marketplace for hedge funds and Wall Street investors.
The Independent Media Institute study found 40% of the nation's 6,700 charter schools are part of corporate chains or franchises. Sillette says many charters do good work and are operated by and accountable to their communities. But the report recommends a national moratorium on their rapid growth until the industry's governing structures and business models can be assessed and improved. The study outlines how public tax dollars follow students who enroll in charters, taking money away from already struggling public systems. Sillette says most major U.S. cities are now divided into private and public tracks and argues the future of one of the nation's few institutions where people from diverse backgrounds come together is at risk.
Different language backgrounds, cultural backgrounds, racial backgrounds. The aim of public schools has always been to create a place where the so-called melting pot can occur.
Sillette says companies frequently mix nonprofit and for-profit wings to win taxpayer subsidies, further boosting profits. He adds some charters have also successfully lobbied to eliminate democratically elected boards, public oversight, and accountability. Ohio has not been without its fair share of charter school controversy. The report notes the July 2015 resignation of the state's top official in charge of charters after he was caught upgrading performance records at some failing schools. This is Mary Sherman, Ohio News Connection.
4:48, you are listening to Mountain Edition on Moorhead State Public Radio. All Things Considered from National Public Radio is coming your way at 5 o'clock this afternoon. And Braxton has sports, and he's up right now.
Good afternoon with Moorhead State Public Radio Sports. I'm Braxton Howard. The scene is set for the final game of the World Series, with either the Cubs or Indians finishing the season as world champs. AP correspondent Matt Lodi reports.
The champion of the 2016 Major League Baseball season will be decided tonight at Progressive Field in Cleveland as the Chicago Cubs and Cleveland Indians play in Game 7 of the World Series. The Cubs have rallied for two straight wins to tie the series at three games apiece. They'll look to break their 108-year championship drought. The Indians will try to break their 68-year streak of not winning a championship. They'll send their ace, Corey Kluber, to the mound. He's 4-1 with an 0.89 ERA and five starts in the playoffs, 2-0 with an 0.75 ERA in the World Series. Kyle Hendricks will go for the Cubs. He's 1-1 with a 2.45 ERA in the postseason. Matt Lodi, Cleveland.
With only three games left this season, Moorhead State football coach Rob Tenier wants his 2-6 Eagles to play with some urgency. MSU starts its stretch drive with a game Saturday against Butler and Indianapolis.
It's a game that we really need. There's no question about that. And you know, the motto here from until the rest of the year is, you know, we want this to be a November to remember. And we want to be 3-0, and this is the first step to be in that going into the offseason.
Butler is 4-5 this season and coming off of a 23-12 win last Saturday at Valparaiso. The Eagles ended a three-game losing streak against the Bulldogs last year with a 34-21 win at Jane Stadium. After squeaking out a last-minute victory last weekend at Virginia, 7th-ranked Louisville is turning its attention towards Saturday's opponent, Boston College. Coach Bobby Petrino says, don't let their 4-4 record fool you. The Golden Eagles are a good team.
They always play great defense. They're very physical. They run full speed to the ball, and they hit and tackle. Offensively, we very aware of the quarterback. We know him well. I've got great respect for him. I've always thought he really throws the ball well and can run with it. A very good running back. So we're going to have to get ready and go practice and perform well and play well.
Saturday's contest at Papa John's Cardinal Stadium, where the Cards are 4-0 this season, kicks off at noon. The Brown County football team is preparing for its Class 4A playoff opener at Bourbon County. While the Vikings sport a 2-8 record, the Colonels are 5-5. However, Round coach Gene Peterson believes that mark is a bit deceiving.
They had a tough schedule early, so it really can't go by their, you know, the losses that they had. You know, they got beat by Rock Castle, Mass and Central, and some people. And so, you know, they've had some tough losses, but, you know, they're a very excellent football team.
Senior quarterback Trevor Lucky paces Bourbon's offense. He's passed for nearly 1,600 yards and 15 touchdowns. His top target is junior receiver Titus Ransom, who's caught 61 balls, good for 865 yards and 8 scores. Head coach Marvin Lewis is having his Cincinnati Bengals work on cleaning up their game during their bye week. Pointing ahead to their November 14th contest against the Giants, Lewis says the Bengals can't afford to make the same kind of mistakes that they made in last Sunday's 27-all tie in London against the Redskins.
We missed PAT, we missed field goal, and, you know, those are big things. We put a punt down the middle of the field. You know, those are things you can't have. We have two penalties in the kicking game. You know, those are things that hurt you. And, you know, going in to the week, my lesson for the football team is the smarter team will win the game. And don't play down to it. Play, you know, play the way we need to play.
At 3-4-1 now, the Bengals are hoping to get some traction as they bid to get back into the AFC North race. The Morehead State men's basketball team is gearing up for the 2016-17 season. Coming off of a 24-13 season last year and making the College Basketball Invitational Championship, head coach Sean Wood says last year's run has really benefited his program.
It was good. You know, it gets our name out there. Everybody remembers us. It's helping in recruiting for a lot of reasons. You know, now they know that this place is worth coming to play basketball. You know, we you know, this is just not you know, just an overseas situation in Eastern Kentucky. This is a, you know, a school that has success in basketball.
The Eagles host Cincinnati Christian on Sunday in an exhibition game at 2 p.m. Morehead State women's basketball coach Greg Todd is getting ready to unveil the 2016-17 version of his team. The Eagles will host Transylvania on Thursday night in a 7 o'clock exhibition game. While Todd believes his group will again produce plenty of points, he says the key to MSU's hopes this season will be improving its defensive play.
We feel like with our defense getting stronger, better overall personnel, that by conference time that we can be a high octane scoring team, but also a tough team to play against defensively.
The MSU officially opens up the season a week from Friday by entertaining Georgia State. And finally, in sports, the Morehead State volleyball team hosts Eastern Kentucky tonight at 7 in its last home match of the season. With his team at 7-5 in the OVC, Coach Jamie Gordon says it's a contest the Eagles need to win.
This match here would you know, kind of lock up a spot for us in the OVC tournament. So it's important at that level. It's important because it's our final home match, and you want to, you know, finish things with a bang for your fans. It's EKU, so you've got the competitive component there.
Overall, the Eagles are 11-15. The Colonels are 12-12. They swept MSU in a three-game contest in Richmond back in September. That's it for sports for Morehead State Public Radio. I'm Braxton Howard.
Support for MSPR comes from MSU Athletics online at msueagles.com. Eagle Volleyball welcomes Eastern Kentucky tonight at 7 p.m., and women's basketball opens their season with an exhibition game hosting Transylvania tomorrow night at 7 p.m. Tickets and information available from the Morehead State Athletic Office at 783-2386 or online at msueagles.com.
Good afternoon from the National Offices of Hilliard Lyons. This is Bud Luke with your closing stock market report for MSU Public Radio. U.S. equities closed lower after the Federal Reserve kept interest rates unchanged, while worries surrounding the presidential election weighed on investor sentiment. And at the close, the Dow Industrials did finish with a loss of 77.46 at 17,959.64. The S&P 500 was down 13.78 at 2,097.94, and the NASDAQ Composite was down 48.01 at 5,105.57. New York Stock Exchange breadth was over 3-1 in favor of losing stocks over winners. With financial markets anticipating a rate hike before the end of the year, the Federal Reserve held interest rates steady. And, of course, this was the second and last day of their November meeting, and the Fed did continue to acknowledge that the case for a move is getting stronger. And, of course, the markets are strongly betting that there will be a rate hike of 0.25% when the Fed does meet in December. In economic news, ADP said the U.S. economy created less jobs than expected in October, adding 147,000 jobs. ADP's report serves as a preview for the government's monthly non-farm payrolls report, slated for release Friday morning. In oil markets, U.S. crude prices sank almost 3%, settling at $45.34 a barrel after the EIA reported a crude stockpile build of 14.4 million barrels, and this is actually the largest increase on record. Gold futures for December delivery rose $20.20, settling at $1,308.20 an ounce, and overseas European markets were weak, with Germany's DAX and Britain's Financial Times indices both down over 1%. In Asia, markets were also weak, with Japan's Nikkei down 1.75%, and Shanghai was down 0.625%. And among Dow industrial stocks, your best performers were 3M and Home Depot. Your worst performers were Verizon and Pfizer. On the S&P 500, the best performers were Amerisource, Bergen, and Henry Schein, and the worst performers were Frontier Communications and Cerner. Turning now to stocks of local interest, it was Ashland Global down 43 cents at 111.11, CSX up 33 cents at 30.74, AEP down 77 cents at 62.61, AK Steel up a penny at 5.12, Marathon Petroleum down $1.32 at 41.02, and U.S. Bancorp was down 45 cents to finish at 44.01. Reporting for MSU Public Radio, this is Bud Loop from the Ashland offices of Hilliard Lyons.
Taking a final look at the area weather forecast. Tonight, partly cloudy this evening, then becoming mostly cloudy later on. Lows will be near 55 degrees overnight. Thursday, warm and mostly cloudy with a chance of showers in the morning, then showers likely in the afternoon. Highs are going to be in the lower 70s tomorrow, and the chance of rain is at 70%. For tomorrow night, partly cloudy with a 40% chance of showers in the evening, lows in the mid-40s. For Friday, sunny skies with highs around 60 degrees. Friday night, clear with areas of valley fog through the night, patchy frost developing late, lows will be in the mid-30s. For Saturday, sunny with highs in the mid-60s. Saturday night, mostly clear with patchy valley fog, lows in the upper 30s. For Sunday, sunny with highs in the upper 60s. And Sunday night, clear with patchy valley fog, lows will be in the upper 30s. It is currently 83 degrees in Ashland, 81 in Flemingsburg. It's 82 degrees in Inez, 80 degrees in Lexington, 80 degrees in Winchester as well. Right here on the campus of Morehead State University, it is currently 81 degrees.
And that does it for us on Mountain Edition this afternoon. We had help from Chuck Moraz, Arlo Barnett, Ellen Barnett, Nathan Gutierrez, Braxton Howard, Courtney Howell, Sean Delaney, Ashley Chapman, Kenzie Thompson, and Victoria Agee. Our feature story this afternoon was done by Mary Sherman of the Ohio News Connection. This is Morehead State Public Radio, WMKY Morehead, and translator W202 BH Inez. Our show is archived daily on the web at WMKY.org. For Samantha Morrill and all of the MSPR News team, I'm Dan Conte, Moorhead State Public Radio News. All Things Considered is next. It's 5 o'clock.